Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Wow!
Yeah. Hey, this is the Patrick Madrid Show, and that means you can call this number and get on the air with your comment or question. It's 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. We're going to go to the phones right now and talk to Mike in West Allis, Wisconsin. Hello, Mike. Welcome.
Oh, good morning, Patrick.
Yes.
Patrick, I know this sounds awfully simplistic, so please forgive me, but I was born totally blind, so I've never seen. And all my life, I have made the sign of the cross, at least what I believe is. And I'm going to tell you what I do, and you tell me if I'm wrong or doing it correctly.
You got it.
When we say in the name of the Father, I touch my forehead.
Yep.
When I say and of the Son, I touch the heart. And when it's the Holy Spirit, it's respectively the left and right shoulder, symbolizing what I think a crucifix or cross looks like. Am I right, or is that the wrong way to do it?
That's exactly the right way to do it. You know, for a Latin Rite Catholic, that's exactly how we do it.
Oh, so I've been doing it right all my life.
You have, yeah. Now, when you were a little kid, when you were little, do you remember your mom or somebody else kind of showing you, moving your hand to show you?
It's frozen in my memory. It's frozen in my mind, yeah. But I was under the impression a lot of people just do it by touching their brow. They maybe move their finger a couple inches. And I thought, no, use the whole arm, you know, head, heart. So,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You can. I mean, first of all, let's remember that when you make the sign of the cross in itself, that's a good thing. But it's always a good idea to try to do something well. And so the more intentionally you are making the sign of the cross, thinking about what you're doing, the better, because it's obviously more grace filled for you. So when you touch your the different parts of your chest, your head, et cetera. I try to make the sign of the cross not in an overly hasty way, because it's easy to sort of like...
Me neither, Patrick.
Yeah, you know how sometimes, you know, well, I see people who sometimes they just sort of... You're not even sure what they're doing. They're just sort of moving their hand around because it's not really thoughtful.
Yeah.
The more thoughtful, the more, if we slow it down, think about what we're doing, the more thoughtful it is, I think the more spiritually beneficial it becomes.
I couldn't agree more, Patrick. I'll keep doing it. I always do it in public, not to be showy, but right. When I go to a restaurant with my friend on Sunday, when the meal comes, I always just quietly make it, fold my hands, say my meal prayer, say it again, and eat.
That's right. Yeah,
okay,
you've got
Patrick.
It. You've got it down. You're a great example, Mike, to other people, and I'm sure that people over the years have seen you do that, and you've helped them by doing it. So thank you, Mike. Great, always great talking to you. Let's go now to Patrick in Dallas, Texas. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, so my question is, I was recently asked by my niece to be godfather to her child, and my niece's dad, my brother-in-law, happens to be a deacon in the Catholic Church, and told me that... I was not worthy to be her godfather. I didn't meet the qualifications because I got married outside of Catholic Church. So therefore, I didn't check all the marks. So I wanted to ask if that was correct, because he also went further to say that I should not be receiving the body of Christ in the church because I didn't get married in the church.
Okay, there's a lot there. Do you mind if I ask you a couple questions that will help me clarify in my own mind what's going on?
Sure.
Okay.
Of course.
So are you yourself Catholic? I mean, did you receive baptism, confirmation, and the Holy Eucharist when you were young?
That is correct, yes.
Okay. So you're fully initiated into the church. And when you got married, did you get married to a Catholic woman, non-Catholic woman, baptized, non-baptized?
She was a convert. So yes, in order to prepare for that, she did convert to Catholicism.
Okay. So she made the effort, which is great, to become Catholic, and yet you two did not get married in the Catholic Church?
Yes, but there was a reason associated with that, and it had to do with the same person, because at the time we were doing IVF, and he had advised not to do that.
Who's he?
So he wouldn't marry my brother-in-law. He wouldn't marry us in the Catholic Church because we were going through that process, and he thought that to be wrong. So we said, okay, well, we're going to get married anyway, so we'll do it this way.
So you were doing IVF before you were even married?
That's correct.
Okay. So there was a sexual relationship before the wedding?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I'm just trying to get a sense of, you know, like the chronology of what was going on. Well, I mean, your brother's right, or your brother-in-law's right, and maybe he was heavy-handed about it. I don't know. But strictly speaking, number one, IVF in itself, in vitro fertilization, is seriously sinful. So if he was the one who told you you shouldn't do that, he was right. Now, obviously, if God blessed you and your wife with children, glory to God, and we can rejoice and be glad that these children are here, you know, because every human life is precious and we accept these children as we would anyone else. But it doesn't change the fact that the way in which they were conceived on your part, not their part, has nothing to do with them personally, but on your part, that would be a serious sin. And so he was right to warn you about that. Would that you had heeded his warning, but this is life. So then when you went to get married, two problems here. Number one is, if you're both Catholic and you're both engaged in a serious sin and you're not sorry for it, you're not in the right disposition to receive the sacrament of holy matrimony in any case, but by not getting married in the church, does that mean you went to the Justice of the Peace or something like that?
We found a venue and we had an ordained minister provide the services for us.
Okay. So I understand the desire to get married. I understand all that. But as a Catholic, both of you actually have the obligation to get married according to the church's canonical form. And that means get married in the church and have the marriage witnessed and blessed officially by a priest, a bishop, or a deacon. So with that not having happened, then your marriage is objectively invalid because that's a requirement for validity for Catholics. It doesn't apply to non-Catholics in any way, but for Catholics it does. So your brother-in-law, who told you that you shouldn't be receiving communion or that you can't be a godparent, he's correct. Because one of the requirements under the church's law for being a godparent is you have to be living, you know, making an honest effort to live your Catholic faith. And if you haven't been or you aren't now, well, then that would disqualify you. Now, this is not an insurmountable problem. If you're ready to get right with God and you're ready to make a good, thorough, honest confession, and if you're really sorry for the sins that you've committed, then you're just one step away from being eligible to be a godfather, because your sacramental life can resume. You make a good confession. You cease doing any sins that you may be engaged in right now that are serious. You have a firm purpose of amendment, and then you're good to go. And if you did that, then you would be in a position to be a godparent if they wanted to ask you to do that.
Okay. Well, I feel good about that because I've gone to probably confession 3 or 4 times since before Easter. So
that's awesome.
I'm in a good place as far as that is going. And I'm doing a 7-day novena to St. Joseph. And I recently bought a book that I'm reading that's a 33-day process that gets me closer to understanding his worth and his reason. And I'm being consecrated to him. So
that's great.
I think I'm in a good place that way. And I've always felt that I was worthy because I was going to confession, but he kind of threw that little thing in there. And I was like, okay, well, I feel like I've gone to confession and I'm in a good place that way. So why am I not worthy?
Well, if you don't mind, I mean, I'd like to explore that just a little bit further. I don't know why he would say that. Does he have a really clear window into your spiritual life? I mean, do you share with him the circumstances of your spiritual life, or is he just guessing?
I think he's just guessing.
Okay. Because, you know, I mean, you can always tell him, you know, I'm sorry if I'm giving you the impression that I'm, you know, a pagan or I'm living a bad life, but I am going to confession and I am making an honest effort to live according to the teachings of the church. He doesn't have a right to know that, but, you know, he's family. So if you wanted to tell him, You could tell him that. That may change his way of looking at things. Now, keep in mind that he himself is not the gatekeeper of what you yourself can and cannot do. But everything you told me thus far, what he said is right. I mean, he's telling you the truth on those issues. But is there, when you say you're in a good place, and I want to press just a little bit further, and if you don't want to answer the question, please feel free not to. I mean, this is not, you know, this is your private information here. But when you went to confession, did you say everything? Did you hold anything back? Any serious sins that you knew you had done, but you just were maybe too embarrassed to say it, or you weren't sorry for that? Or did you get every single last thing out there and you're truly sorry for it?
Well, I mean, I think I've got everything out there. Well, I think what I did not say is that I didn't get married in the church because I didn't know that I had created such a major sin by doing that. So in my next visit, then that'll be the first thing out of my mouth is to mention that, but that's the only piece I haven't confessed.
That's good. I mean, it's not good that you didn't confess it before, but maybe you just didn't realize. Fair enough. Now you do. So when you go to confession, you don't have to go back through all the other sins. If you let me put it this way. If your last confession, you genuinely didn't realize that getting married outside the church is sinful, then okay. I don't know how likely that is, though. If I had to guess, somewhere deep down inside, you knew, and maybe because he told you, that there was something seriously wrong with that. So my advice would be, when you go to confession this next time around, tell the priest, last time I went to confession, the time before that, and the time before that, I'd never mentioned that I got married outside the Catholic Church, and I was living with my wife for X number of years, and I didn't mention that in confession. And I wasn't, you know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but if it's the case that you're saying, I knew that I wasn't supposed to do that, but I just never got around to mentioning that in confession, mention that when you go, as you said you would. But here's why I'm emphasizing this, because if in your mind you were thinking to yourself, I know I should confess this sin, and you intentionally didn't, then your last confession was not valid, and it wasn't spiritually beneficial to you. It's a step in the right direction.
I truly never thought of that as being out of place, because I feel like everything positive and every blessing I have is because, and it's a gift of God. And I think if he allowed me to be in that place and to have that, I kind of felt like, you know, what, like the Bible says, what God has brought together, let no man undo. So I figured if that happened and he allowed it to happen, it was a blessing. So it was, to me, that was from God.
Let me offer you a word of caution.
As a sin.
Fair enough. But let me offer you a word of caution. That rule of thumb will get you into all kinds of problems in life, because you can justify anything, even gross sin, by saying, well, God allowed it to happen, therefore it must be okay. God allowed this.
Maybe not properly. Yeah, I agree. And maybe I didn't properly word that, but something along those lines.
Okay. Well, I'm just a guy with a microphone. I'm just here to offer advice and, you know, give help where I can. So please don't misinterpret my reason for saying what I'm saying, but you're a brother in Christ and I care about you. There, as the Bible says, there's a way that seems right to a man, but its way leads to death. And so we're really good at fooling ourselves and rationalizing and making ourselves, lulling ourselves into thinking that everything's okay and what I'm doing is really okay and God's a nice God and all that. So my advice would be, put those thoughts out of your mind and say, Lord, you said you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. So I want to know the truth. And I know that the church you established is teaching the truth, and I want to live according to that truth, regardless of what I think or my, you know, rationalizations or things like that. I would encourage you, push those thoughts away and just live in the truth. And okay. Now that you know, and sounds like you've known for a time now, when you go to confession and ask the priest, you know, when I was under the misimpression, whatever, that I didn't need to bring this up, and I now realize that I need to. Should I confess my prior mortal sins as well? Should I do that? Ask him. And he may say, you know, that might be a good idea. And then you just tell him again, and then you know that you're done with it. And you can leave all those sins at the foot of the cross. Jesus forgives you, and you can move forward in peace. And that's what you want, right? You want to be at peace and you want to be firing on all cylinders, right?
You got it, yeah.
That's my advice.
That's perfect. Thank you for helping me with that.
You're welcome. And I do hope and pray that the door opens soon so you can become that godfather. That's an awesome responsibility and quite an honor.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Patrick. Let's go to Jennifer now in Austin, Texas. Good morning, Jennifer.
Hi, Patrick. I have a quick question for you. My niece is a college freshman at Texas A&M.
Okay.
And she's Catholic, born and raised, and she's getting ready to go on an 8-week summer camp, a work camp, where she will be working, and it's a Christian organization, but it's not Catholic. It's called Student Mobilization, STUMO. Okay. And she has asked my husband and I for a donation, which we're happy to help, but I'm really concerned that this could be a time where she walks away from her faith unknowingly. And she's going with girls that are in her sorority, and they're all, none of them are Catholic. She's the only Catholic. So I'm asking for advice on what I can say, or what would you recommend doing?
I would not recommend doing this. That's the first thing I'll say, because although I'm not deeply familiar with this, I've heard of it before. And it is a church, kind of a parachurch ministry, and its stated goal is evangelization, and they are equipping these young people, and in itself it's a great thing to speak about Jesus and publicly talk about Jesus and whatnot, but this is a solidly evangelical Protestant organization, and if your daughter goes to this, 8 weeks later she will come home not a Catholic. I can almost guarantee it.
Wow. Okay. She's already committed to it. And it's not my daughter, it's my niece.
Oh, sorry.
And I don't think I have that much influence. So with that being said, is there any words of wisdom you would recommend I share with her before she goes?
How strong is she in her Catholic faith and identity?
She's been confirmed and she's done the classes and she's very influential, and her best friend is Catholic, but she didn't get into her sorority, so she's just influenced by these girls she's around, and she's been going to their church, and her mom thinks it's, you know, well, at least she's going, at least she's doing something, at least she hasn't walked away completely like her two other siblings have.
Mm-hmm.
So
she's next, by the way. I can guarantee it. I hate to say the words, but I can guarantee that she's the next one out the door. And she won't just drift away. She'll become an ardent member of this organization and what they believe, which is basically evangelical Protestantism. And I mean, these are attractive young people who are dynamic. They want to serve. They love God. So many wonderful things about that, no doubt about it. But the purpose of this group and many other groups like it, and there are Catholic groups like this too, which of course I would favor, obviously, but their whole point is to inculcate a certain religious worldview, and it's not Catholic. And so they're going to reform her way of looking at Jesus. And this is why these things, with all of their fine points, they can be extremely damaging, because, let's face it, a lot of Catholic young people, they're just so utterly unprepared, and they don't have good catechesis to begin with. They don't have a strong, that's why I asked you about her Catholic identity. I mean, if you have a young man or woman who's a strong, committed follower of Jesus, Catholic, receiving the sacraments, familiar with Scripture, knows what he or she believes and is well-grounded, that's different. But the average Catholic young person is not like that, I'm sorry to say.
Right, right. And that's part of the dilemma, because she has embraced these girls so much, which is nice, and she's reading her Bible and taking notes and for the first time in her life. So her mom sees that as good, as so do I, that she's doing that, you know, compared to not. But like you said, I'm concerned that it's going to lead her in a direction that there's no turning back from.
Well, I mean, never say never. And with God, all things are possible. So even people who do go down this road have been known to come back, but not very often. If it were my daughter, and I realize she's not your daughter, but if she were my daughter, I would tell her she can't go. Now, she may say, Dad, I'm 20 years old. I can go if I want to. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, well, you're right about that. That's true. But let me tell you what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Now, it seems to me that maybe this is past the point of no return. I don't know if there's anything you could say that would undo her desire to do this. And I could understand why. She's excited. Her friends are going. She's, you know, it's, mm-hmm. it's the thrill of a lifetime. So I understand all the dynamics involved in this. It's a shame that it got this far before you realized what was going on. And I'm sorry that her mother wasn't really seeing the bigger picture here.
Yeah.
So, I tell you what, do this. If you want like an emergency quick thing you can do for her, give her a copy of the book Surprised by Truth. Now, full disclosure, I edited this book, but I can guarantee, here's another guarantee. I can guarantee you at the very least that this book Surprised by Truth, which is a series of conversion testimonies of former evangelical Protestants. In other words, the group that she's going into, It's a collection of conversion stories of people like that who became Catholic, who realized that that wasn't the fullness of the faith, as fun and as dynamic as it is. That's not what Jesus started. Jesus started the Catholic Church. And so their stories are very powerful and life-changing. And so if you want to give her a kind of inoculation, if it's inevitable that she's going to go, at least you can give her an immunization, an inoculation, and ask her to read this book before she goes. And it'll at least give her a booster in her Catholic faith and answers to a lot of the kind of questions that she's going to be asked when she's at this program. I would try that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I really admire you for doing everything you can to try to help your niece, your godniece, godchild niece. I'm glad you're doing that. And she's lucky to have you in her life. Send her a link to Relevant Radio. Send her a link to this program and say, hey, there's this guy on the radio. He's talking about you. You got to listen. Maybe I can help. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Looking for a new job? How about one that offers you opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, the Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester, an Illinois life insurance company not available in all states.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Got a note here from David listening. I'm not sure where David is. Might even be listening on the Relevant Radio app. Anyway, he says, a while back you discussed an OBGYN who was the charge physician in a high-risk pregnancy facility. And he says in his discussion, he said that there was never a time in all of his years when it was necessary to abort the unborn baby to save the life of the mother. I am currently preparing some correspondence to our legislators in opposition to some proposed legislation. I would like to reference that obstetrician, but I can't remember his name. Okay, here it is. His name is Dr. Anthony Levitino, Levatino. Dr. Anthony Levitino. Now, we've played some video or some audio. Well, they're videos, but they're audio clips that you hear on the radio from him, in which he, for example, says, you know, for 10 years, I was the head of obstetrics at, you know, Mass General Hospital or some big hospital like that. I was a faculty member, head of the department, you know, delivered tens of thousands of babies. And I think at one time he was, he may have been doing abortions. And he says, in my expert, longstanding medical opinion, there has never, not even once, been a time when it was necessary to abort a baby to save the life of the mother. He says, that's a fallacy. It's a commonly heard fallacy. It's not really true, medically speaking. Now, you know, I'm just a guy with a microphone. You can accept my point of view on this or not, but I don't have any standing in the medical world, but he does. And so somebody who wants to say, well, sometimes it is necessary to abort a baby to save the life of the mother, and go argue with him, because he's got the diplomas and the experience, and I don't. So go argue with Dr. Anthony Levitino. I have a feeling you're not going to win. And I don't mean you, by the way, David. I'm just speaking rhetorically. So good on you that you're trying to put together some data in support of your position. And all you have to do is go onto the YouTubes and look up Dr. Anthony Levitino and abortion, and you'll find a number of different videos that he has done. And I hope that's helpful to you. 888-914-9149. We'll go now to Michael in Las Vegas. Hi, Michael.
Hi, I was just trying to get you off speaker. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Welcome.
I since I started listening to you guys, I've been listening for about a year and a half now. And thank you for all you guys, everything everybody does at Relevant Radio, because it's fantastic. I refer it to people.
Thank you.
I've gotten a few people to start listening. So I was at the mass. Something you've gotten me very acutely aware of is the whole transubstantiation thing during the mass. I'm just so in tune to that when it happens. Mm-hmm. It's, and I thank you for that. But I was noticing last Sunday when the priest takes the chalice and drinks the last of the blood of Christ, because it's already been transubstantiated.
Right.
He wipes it out with a cloth, the last remnants of the blood of Christ. What mm-hmm. happens to that cloth? Because it's got the blood of Christ on it. I mean, you can't. It's not like you can wring it out. I mean, do they have a special laundry or something that they do?
In a way, yes, they do.
That stuff?
Yeah, so those altar linens, including the purificator, there are different names for the different cloths. So to answer your question, if you watch closely, what you'll see in the time after communion when the priest is cleaning the sacred vessels is he doesn't wipe the chalice immediately. What he does is he rinses the chalice carefully with water. So the altar server will come over. More water is poured into the chalice, maybe half a cup's worth, whatever the priest decides. And you'll notice him. He swirls it around. He looks at it closely. And the reason he's doing this is to make sure that the water catches any remaining traces of the precious blood that might remain inside the chalice, and for that matter, maybe on the rim of the chalice. And this is done very carefully and closely so that when he consumes that water, which he will do when he's done with that part of the cleaning, then there is no more precious blood left on the chalice. So that's when he takes that little cloth, the purificator, and that's when he wipes it down. So at that point, there's no more precious blood. He's wiping the remaining water droplets and whatever may be of water in that chalice. Nonetheless, because sometimes it's possible that there could be some minute traces of the precious blood, there are different ways of handling it. One would be if the sacristan sees that there is a discoloration, he or she could place that purificator in a bowl of water, and then whatever remnant might be in the cloth comes out, goes into the water. And keep in mind that the real presence of Christ remains only as long as the properties of wine and bread are present. So the physical characteristics of wine and bread, when those cease to be, so like when you receive the host and the body starts breaking down what once was bread and is now the real presence of Christ, as soon as that no longer has the properties and characteristics of bread, the real presence of Christ is no longer present. So literally within a matter of a few minutes, the real presence is gone. And the same is true when it comes to the precious blood. So you can be really confident that by the time that cloth is being used to wipe down the chalice, there is no more precious blood there. That may be more of an answer than you were looking for, but there you have it.
No, I like that you usually give more of an answer than what we're all looking for, because it really helps. So I think it's amazing.
I'm glad.
All right. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate that. Sam in, well, I was going to say Athens, but now Coolidge, Georgia. Sam, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Patrick. How are you doing today? Oops, I just messed up, didn't I?
That's okay. Everybody does. I'll give you my stock answer because it's true. I'm not too bad for a sinner. That's the honest truth.
Amen, brother. Well, yes, I'm not in Athens anymore. I'm in Coolidge, Georgia, my hometown.
I saw a picture of your beautiful new home. I know it's not new, but it's new for you. You posted that on Twitter, and I'm really happy for you. Congratulations.
Thank you, Patrick. It's 108 years old, and my grandfather built it in 1915.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. So what's on your mind this morning?
I'm wondering why Jesus refers to himself as the Son of Man.
Well, the scholars say, and I'm inclined to believe them and think it's the truth, and that is that it was a humble, it's a sign of the Lord's humility that he didn't refer to himself, as others did, by the way, as the Son of God. He referred to himself as the Son of Man. So one of the reasons is to be humble. But the other reason is because that was one of the messianic titles. So when he referred to himself as the Son of Man, his listeners would realize that he was telling them, I am the Messiah, because he was invoking a messianic title. That seems to be the reason.
Okay. Well, that makes perfect sense to me.
I'm glad. Well, Sam, hang in there. I know the warm weather's coming, so stay cool. And I'm glad you called in today. Great talking to you as ever. 888-914-9149. How about Albert now in Whittier, California, where I was baptized a long time ago?
Hello, Patrick. Good morning.
Hi there. Welcome.
I'm calling, as I was explaining to the person earlier, is our daughter is, and we're devout Catholics, attend Mass, and we've instilled that in our daughter. Unfortunately, our daughter also has an IEP, and she has some learning challenges. And it's a shame that here in Southern California, none of the Catholic schools have any resources in order to help that. And now that she's going into high school, as much as we hear in church, your children should be in a Catholic school, your children should do this, or homeschool, which is very impractical for us living in California. None of the high schools out here really make an effort to service kids that have challenges. And there's so many Catholic school kids that have these differences and are just alienated from any kind of Catholic school. And it's a shame. And I just really wanted to get your advice. Maybe you had some schools that you know of, high schools that do have resources. There's a prominent one in La Puente. I don't want to mention the name, that our priest at St. Gregory the Great told us, hey, you should go there. And we did. We walked in with our daughter, and the lady there said, oh, no, she'll be a good fit. And then once the admissions counselor saw her packet, I mean, they didn't even talk to her after that. And it's just a shame. And we've had that.
Did they say why?
We can't help. We can't service her. And we don't quite understand it because, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people just look at paper instead of speaking to a child, you know, and we've had that, you know, for some extent, even in the public sector, the public schools. And it's just a shame that they don't take the time to interview the child and speak to them. And they could see, I mean, whatever challenges she may have in school, her recollection and her faith is incredibly strong. And
how old is she?
Comprehension. She's 15 now. She's a freshman in high school.
Now, when you say IEP, I'm not like super up on all the jargon, but I understand that means individualized education program. Is that what you mean by that when you talk about IEP?
Kids that have challenges, they may have some special ed classes intermixed with general ed classes or purely special ed. Okay. My daughter is fortunate that she has a couple of three of her subjects are special ed, but they it still revolves around the same high school curriculum because she's on a diploma track. And then, but she also takes general ed biology and she's doing well in it. And so there's the capability to learn. It's just whether or not they want to put the time.
Got it.
And unfortunately, the Catholic schools here don't do that.
All right. So I don't know what to tell you about that because obviously that's a very specialized topic that I don't have any information about. So I wish it were easier and better for you. I'm sorry it's not. So if you want to keep her in the Catholic school system, which I think is the right thing to do, if homeschooling is not an option, then my advice would be go to the Archdiocese and talk to the people in the Department of Education for the Archdiocese. There will be a superintendent and then various other people on staff there. And maybe even make an appointment if you have time to go downtown and meet there, or at least have a phone call if that's possible. And they may say, oh, okay, well, we're happy to tell you we have this program or we have that program or this school or that school. That's where you're going to find the kind of information you're looking for. If it exists, they are going to know about it and they'll be happy to tell you about it.
Well, thank you. I knew you were from the area and I knew you might be able to point us in the right direction, at least, because it's been a long journey for us.
I'm sorry. And I realize that those long journeys can become very discouraging, but hang in there. Your daughter will thank you for it when the time comes. And, you know, if she's 15, there's not that much time left. So, you know, it would be different, I guess, if you were having this trouble when she was 7 or 8. But I really do believe, in fact, I know with certitude that the Archdiocesan Department of Education, I don't know exactly what the title is, but those people will know the answer to your question. All right. Thanks, Albert. Hang in there. You're a good dad. May I say to you, I'll be right back. Our sponsor, Christendom College, offers our listeners access to free online classes at getprinciples.com/truth. Acclaimed philosopher Dr. John Cutteback is teaching a class now, Understanding Human Nature, at getprinciples.com/truth.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
I love my job, I'll tell you that. I really love my job because I get to hang out with you. Here's my number, 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. We'll go to Irma now in McAllen, Texas. We have a ton of Texas calls today, and I'm loving it. Good morning, Irma.
Good morning.
Yes, ma'am.
Good morning. I would like to know why I listen to Relevant Radio, and what I get from Relevant Radio is that if you're not a Catholic, you're not a true Christian, or your church or your marriage is not valid.
Good heavens.
You know,
how on earth did you get that idea?
Well, I get a little bit of skepticism from the Catholics from your program that if you're not Catholic, you're not a true Christian, or that Jesus established the Catholic Church. Now, my question also is, like in Mark, the book of Mark, I think it's chapter 28, where disciples were asking Jesus, hey, there's a group out there that is not of our group. Mm-hmm. And Jesus said, if they're not against us, you know, leave them alone. They are for us.
Mm-hmm.
So why does it have to be the Catholic Church? And it seems like it's like an anathema if you're not a Catholic.
My dear lady, I am so sorry that you somehow managed to get exactly the opposite impression of what we as Catholics believe. And I'm so glad that you called so that I can clear it up for you. So I'll do my best, and be sure to let me know if I've resolve this. I hope I can. So first of all, you said earlier about we don't recognize Protestant marriages. We absolutely do. Absolutely. And here's the church's teaching, Catholic Church's teaching, is that marriage as an institution predates all religion. God established marriage in the garden, as Jesus said in Matthew 19. He says, in the beginning, God made them male and female. And this is why a man leaves his parents, his family, and clings to his wife, and the two become one flesh. And what God has joined together, let no man put asunder. So this natural institution of marriage predates the Catholic Church, predates Judaism, predates all religion, goes all the way back to the garden. So the Catholic Church's official teaching is that marriage is good in and of itself, and any two people, a man and a woman, who are eligible to be married to each other have the right to marriage, and the Catholic Church recognizes that marriage as valid, absolutely. To atheists, an atheist and a Jew and a Hindu, to Protestants, you name it, any combination, the church would say, assuming that, you know, let's say that the woman isn't already married to somebody else. What I mean is that if they're both eligible to be married, the Catholic Church says their marriage is valid, unless it can be proven otherwise, but the church assumes that it's valid. And especially so when it comes to Protestant folk. So baptized believers, believers in Jesus who don't happen to be Catholic, the Catholic Church says their marriage not only is valid, all other things being equal, but it's also sacramental. So unlike two people who are not baptized, or if one is baptized and the other isn't, there is no sacrament there. But in the case of two baptized Protestants, that's not only a valid marriage, but it's a sacramental marriage. So I'm truly sorry that somehow the lines got crossed and you thought that the Catholic Church doesn't recognize Protestant marriages. It absolutely 100% does. Now, maybe the mix-up might be in when I talk about Catholics who get married, the Catholic Church recognizes the validity, according to the things that I mentioned a moment ago, for non-Catholic folk, including Protestants. But Catholics have a special obligation, a special duty that is not incumbent upon Protestants or anyone else, and that is to get married in the Catholic Church and have the marriage blessed by a Catholic priest, for example. Now, if a Catholic doesn't do that, then his marriage would be invalid. But this is something for Catholics only. It's not a special privilege. It's a special obligation, you might say. So hopefully that clarifies that issue, Irma. Now, the issue about the Catholic Church being established by Jesus, well, that's a fact. I don't say it to put anyone or anything down. It's just that if you go back in time, if you want to use this way of measuring things, here we are in the year 2023, and we see the Catholic Church. Jesus said in the Gospels that the church, the kingdom of heaven, is like a city set on a hill. He says, this is in Matthew chapter 5, he says, you are the light of the world. No one lights a lamp and then hides it under a basket. Rather, it's put on a stand where it gives light to everyone in the room. And he talks about the visibility of this church. You can find it, you can see it. And of course, Jesus wouldn't go to all the trouble to establish his church and then make it so obscure that nobody could ever really know if he had found it or not. So even if people don't like it, even if they don't agree with it, or they reject it, at least they can say, yes, I know what the Catholic Church is. They go to Mass, they celebrate sacraments, they confess their sins to a priest, they honor Mary, they believe in purgatory. I mean, there are distinctive aspects of the Catholic Church that you won't confuse it with any other group. So whether you agree with it or not, at least you know what it is. So if you were to go backward in time, if you go back a little over 500 years ago, there were no Protestants. I mean, the Catholic Church was there. You'll see, you know, the Pope and the bishops and the people and the teachings and all that. But you go back to, say, the year 1500, there were no Lutherans, there were no Baptists, there were no Methodists, there were no non-denominational folk, there were no Calvary Chapel people, there were no Calvinists or Lutherans. None of those things existed. Protestantism, as we understand it today, or evangelicalism, or whatever you want to call it, non-denominational Christianity, that didn't exist. The Catholic Church was there, though. And go back another, say, 500 years, say, to the year 1000, and you see, the further back you go in time, you see at every step, historically, based upon the records and documents, you see the Catholic Church is there with its teachings and its structure and its visibility, all the way back to the time of the apostles. The historical record demonstrates that not only was the early church not Protestant, it wasn't Mormon, it wasn't Jehovah's Witness, it wasn't Seventh-day Adventist, wasn't Calvinist, wasn't Lutheran, wasn't non-denominational, it was Catholic. And they called themselves Catholics. And they believed in the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist. And they baptized babies. And they prayed for those who had died. And they followed Jesus and believed in Jesus and read the scriptures and went to Mass and all those things because they were Catholic. So that's just one way that you can verify independently. You don't have to believe anything I'm saying. You can check out the facts and look at the documentation. It's all available readily. And I think that's a very powerful way of considering, even if you don't agree with it, at least you could consider the claim the Catholic Church makes that it goes all the way back to the time of Jesus. And none of these other groups do, with all due respect to those folk. So fundamentally, Irma, maybe this is what you're picking up on, is that here at Relevant Radio, we're not trying to provoke anybody. We're trying to invite everybody to come into this church that Jesus established, in which he gave us the New Testament. And he gives us the sacraments. He gives us himself in the Holy Eucharist at Mass every Sunday, every day for that matter, and all the other wonderful blessings that the Lord wants everybody to have, which is why, of course, in Matthew 28, he told the apostles, go into the whole world and make disciples of all nations and baptize them and teach them to observe all that I have commanded you. In essence, he's saying, tell everyone everywhere, come into this church that I established. So that's why we're joyful when we talk about the Catholic Church being the one true church, not because it's our club or we're better than anyone. We're not. And we don't look down on anyone. But we know that what we have is something Jesus wants for you and every other person out there. So that's why we're here, is to try to help people understand that and invite them in. And if that didn't come across the way we intended it to, you have my sincere apology for that, Irma.
Yes. Thank you. Can you suggest some reading on how the Catholic Church was started and how it has evolved and why, they have the doctrine that they have? Some good, reliable reading?
I'd be happy to. Do you have a pen? I can give you a couple titles if you want.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yes, I do.
Okay, so one book I would recommend, this might be a good way to begin the process. It's called Surprised by Truth. Surprised by Truth. And this, there are four volumes in this series. This particular one was published in 1994. I edited it, so I just want to make you aware of that. And this is a book that goes through all these different issues in different ways, explained by different people. But I think that would be a really good book to start with, Surprised by Truth. Okay. Then, and that has 11 chapters in it. So when you're looking, look for the book that's got 11 chapters in it. That's the one you want to look at. There's a great book by Marcellino D'Ambrosio. He's a Texan, by the way. He lives in the Dallas area. And his book is called When the Church Was Young. And that's a book about what were these early Christians like and what did they believe and how did they worship and all of those things. That's a good book. Now, if you want other books, I can recommend many other books. I don't want to overload you, though, but would that be a good start? And then you call back and I can give you some more?
Sure. This is a good start. Okay. And I guess they would be in a bookstore, right? In any bookstore?
They would be. Yeah. Now, these books, you can get them online if you want to, or if you find a Catholic. I don't know if there's a Catholic bookstore in McAllen. Probably there is. But you can get them there. But if you want to have it like today or tomorrow, you could order it online and you'll have it quickly.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Now, did my explanation help a little bit? I mean, did it help clear up that feeling that you had?
Yes, it did. It did. In the sense that something I hadn't thought about when Protestantism started, which was there was another Christian church before the Reformation, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was the Catholic Church.
You're saying that it was the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. What I need to know and find out maybe in these books is how the Pope started and stuff like that, that I'm not.
I have another book for you. I've got another book. Okay. All right. So get your pen back out. This is a book. Okay. Now, I wrote this book, but I can confidently recommend it to you. It's called Pope Fiction. Pope Fiction. So the subtitle is Answers to 30 Myths and Misconceptions About the Papacy. Now, in that book, I explain how did the papacy start? What does the Bible say about this? So there's a lot there, but it's a very readable book. I think you'll find it entertaining and helpful. I really do. And that will answer all your questions about that kind of stuff.
What is your name? You're the author. What is your name?
My name's Patrick Madrid, M-A-D-R-I-D.
Madrid. Okay.
Yeah, Madrid. My family roots are in, well, in Mexico, but my family came up to El Paso, not too far from you, and settled in El Paso when they came up.
It's big, so it's a good 10-hour, 12-hour drive.
Well, that's true.
We're right at the border. But yeah, this is a good start. I'm interested in knowing the truth.
Well, I'm here for you, Irma. I am here for you.
Yeah,
please.
You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.
Indeed.
So what is the truth, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to start learning a little bit more.
That's beautiful.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I hope you'll call me back. And do please keep listening, because I'm here for you every day. Even when I'm not here, I'm here, because we're running reruns on the air. And of course, anytime any of you ever want to listen to this program or any of our programming on Relevant Radio, just go to the website, relevantradio.com/Patrick, in my case, or just use the Relevant Radio app. You can listen to anything. In the middle of the night, you're having trouble getting to sleep, put me on. I guarantee you'll be asleep in 5 minutes. Proven scientifically. I'll be right back.
The Patrick Madrid Show.
It's a household name.
Heck yeah. The Patrick Madrid Show is flipping sweet.